So what a really important message. I was in the shower this evening, and it's strange. Before, just after work, I felt so incredibly tired, but I still did my devotion, and then eventually I had to go and lie down, and I slept. I slept, and then I woke up and went to have a shower, and in the shower the Lord showed me how people are feeling as spiritually exhausted as I was tired. And I thought to myself, you know what, I can't imagine being that tired in a spiritual way, but in a sense I can, because I remember back to the times when I was under such oppression, and I thought, okay, that's interesting. And then he said these words to me, which initially sounded very strange. He said, "Tell them to declare spiritual bankruptcy." It took me a few minutes to try and make sense of that. And the way it made sense eventually is because I kept on asking the Lord questions. And he showed me how through our lives we speak things, we say things, and every time we speak, we are creating a legal contract in the spiritual realm. You know, when we promise to do something for somebody, that's why Jesus says, don't promise. Just let your yes be yes and your no be no. In other words, do what you say you're going to do and don't do what you say you're not going to do. Just be an honorable person. But people, and all of us, I think I'm speaking for all of us. I don't know anybody who is perfect. But people speak things and they say things. They say that they will do something and then they don't. They say that they will do something and they have no real intention of doing it. They commit to things and then realize that they're not able to meet that commitment. And all of these things are spiritual legal contracts held against the individual. And they're held against the individual in their mind saying, you know what, I've let this person down. I've failed this person. I have failed to do this. I promise these things and I never make it. And all of these things, right? And Satan loves it when we speak about something and we say something, because the minute that we say it, he's entitled to challenge it. So often, you know, especially if you say, I promise, then Satan goes, great, I'm just going to rip the rug out underneath your feet, and I've got another contract that you have against you, which you are now in breach of. And so he keeps on loading these things up against us and against us and against us. And sometimes the person passes on and you can't actually now make right because and you've got all of these things binding you. And the more I understood this, the more I realized that, yeah, the only way out of a legal contract in this physical world is to declare bankruptcy. And all of those legal contracts, they can only take what you've got. The little bit that you've got, they can take all of it, and they got to share it amongst themselves. But then you walk out of that, and you are no longer under any legal bondage at all. You have no legal contracts against you, because you've now declared bankruptcy. Nobody can put a hold on you anymore. And normally, there's a period of time which you're under management, so to speak. You can't enter into new contracts. You can't enter into any of these other things because you've got a judgment against you. And so, and normally that's a, well, different countries are different, but you know, it might be a 5-year judgment. Or it could be that you've gotten yourself into such debt that you're a debt slave. You and your family have to go, like in India, they've got debt slaves and Pakistan, they've got debt slaves, and you have to, you and your family now have to go and chip rocks, you know, create gravel out of rocks, break it down, and that's your job for the rest of your life, basically, because you are paying back a debt. And God sees us as being debt slaves to Satan. He sees us bound in bondage of these legal spoken things. And Satan keeps on using these in our minds and in our hearts and just pulling on this thing and pulling on that, and it hurts. Hurts to be reminded of the times that you let people down, and that you said that you'd do something, you just didn't do it, or that you lied intentionally to people or whatever. Satan absolutely loves that. God doesn't want you to have any of that. So how do you declare spiritual bankruptcy? Well, firstly, there has to be a judge that you can go to. There has to be a judge that you can go to, and you need to hand over everything that you have to that judge. And the judge will then take that and apportion it to where it belongs, and you walk away free. Now, when you walk away free, you don't have a house, you don't have a car, you don't have anything, right? They can sell every single thing. Now, generally speaking, they still leave you with clothes and things like that. But most of the time, you've pretty much got no assets to speak of, right? And you're living, you're renting somewhere, or you are, some people wind up just at shelters because they have nothing else. They rely on welfare just to try and find a way to get themselves back up and get a job and things like that, right? Well, when you go to God and you say, I'm looking at my life and I can see that I'm in absolute bondage. I'm in spiritual bondage for all the things that I've spoken, all the things against me, all of this emotional turmoil and hurt and pain. I'm so internally distressed. I'm exhausted. I'm absolutely exhausted. Please, can you save me? Have mercy on me. I know I don't deserve anything. I know that there's nothing I can do to repay what I've done wrong and what I've said. There's no way for me to go and undo what I've done. Please, can you save me? That requires you giving up everything that you have. The right, let me rephrase it, it gives up, you have to give up the right to own those things that you have. The right to own a car, the right to own a house, the right to own, in other words, you've got to give all of that to God. Everything that you have needs to belong to God. You're giving up everything physical that you have. And you've got to give up your soul to God so that he can strip it of all of those legal bondages that are over your soul, all those spoken things that you've got. Now, once you do that and you accept, because that's the process, that's the first part of the process that nobody talks about. It's the first part of the process of giving your heart to Jesus. You can't give your heart to Jesus until you recognize that you are in such a mess. And once you recognize that you're in such a mess and you turn and you look around at all the religions and everything, you realize not one of them has any way to save you from this. They can only say, well, now you do good and then, you know, you're going to have to come back for another life to make up for what you've done wrong. No, you only get one life. You don't come back. That's such a lie from Satan. He loves people who talk about coming back a second time. He knows there's no second time. He just lets them mosey on through life, doing whatever they want. So long as they don't turn to Jesus, They're going to wind up getting to the end, go over the cliff, and he's going to be smiling and say, oh, there's another one that's lost. Lost forever because, you know what? They believed me. They believed Satan's lie. Because they don't come back. So now, once you realize that that's where you are, and you say, okay, you know what? I actually need out. I want to be out of that exhaustion. I want to be free of that. If that's you, then you just need to say, Jesus, help me. Just, I don't know how to do this. I don't understand this whole spiritual thing. I don't know what it is that I'm supposed to fit into or change or whatever. I want out. I want out of this spiritual bondage that I'm in. All these emotional hang-ups that I've got because of all the things that I've done. I want out. Now, killing yourself is not going to help because you're just going to, all you're going to do is wind up sentencing yourself to eternity in hell because you have not addressed the real problem. You've still got all of those things binding you. So, once you get to that point whereby you know that you want out, and you go to Jesus and you say, Jesus, please can you help me? The first question that you have to ask yourself is, does Jesus favor you over anybody else? And the answer to that question is no. He loves everybody the same. And that means that all those bondages that you have over other people, all the things that you've held against other people because of them letting you down, them not keeping their word, them lying to you, them cheating you, stealing from you, breaking stuff, murdering important people in your life, murdering your hopes and dreams with horrible words, and every single thing that anybody else has done, you have to bring. And you've got to give it to Jesus as well. And you've got to say, this is all I have. This is all I have. And I'm not going to hold this against anybody out there. I would like to be set free. And this is all the things that I've been holding against other people. I'm bringing them to you and I'm saying, please, Lord Jesus, I don't know how to do this. You know how to do this in my soul. I don't even know what my soul looks like or how it works, but you know how to do this. I'm bringing all of this and I'm letting every single person go. And a good way to do this is to sit down with a piece of paper and write. Write down each person. This person did this to me. All these things. Because part of your healing is to go and say to them, listen, I'm setting you free. I'm not holding this against you. Half of them, three quarters of them are going to turn around to you and say, I didn't even know that you had a problem with me there. But thank you. You know, it gives you an opportunity to restore the relationships. Some people that you've let down so badly, they're just going to say, I don't care. I'm not going to forgive you. Well, that's their problem. You've done what God said you need to do. So if they don't want to forgive you, well, they're going to remain in bondage until such time as they do forgive. But you'll be set free. And some people will have been so bound up in such pain because of what they did, and you go to them and say, I forgive you. You'll be setting that person free in such ways that you can't imagine. And that's what you want Jesus to do for you. So you make your list. You say, Jesus, I'm committing. I'm committing that I am going to make sure that I go back to these people in one way, shape, or form. Some might be dead, in which case I'm going to pray about that. And I know that they can't hear me from heaven, but I'm not going to be talking to any spirits like that. But I'll talk to you, and you can sort it out with them. And then you declare spiritual bankruptcy. You say, I am now empty. I have no longer any contracts over anybody else, and no one has any contracts over me, because that's what the blood of Jesus is for. Jesus paid the sacrifice to be able to strip all legal things from you. He is the payment. The Father is the judge, but the judge cannot judge if there's no payment. And Jesus steps in and pays it for you. And then you now go under new management. And that new management says, you can't create any new contracts of other people. You can't create any new expectations of other people. You can't hold it against anybody if they lie to you. You can't hold it against anybody if they let you down. Because now you are under management. And anything done to you is done to Jesus. And anything you do to other people is a reflection of Jesus. And so you had best make sure that you don't try and fall back into your previous traps, because you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to hold anything against anybody else. You have declared spiritual bankruptcy. Now, what happens if you choose to start doing those things that you did before, holding grudges and all the rest of it? Well, it's going to come back at you seven times worse. You're going to be in such a worse state. And by the way, when you do that, you void your own sacrifice. When you start holding things against another person, then God says, you remember all that stuff that you came to me before and said, I want to be forgiven. I want to let go of all these things. I want them all taken from me. This burden is so heavy. I'm destroyed. I'm exhausted. Well, they are now all back on you. You have them all back again. You are no longer forgiven. You are no longer forgiven. Because you would not forgive others. You would not set them free. Now, I know in my life, I've gone through this cycle a few times. Certainly in my early days. I mean, I don't do it now anymore. Now, I hold nothing against anybody. But before I understood this principle properly, I gave my heart to the Lord. And you see people, every now and again, they will rededicate their lives to the Lord. Well, what are they saying? They're saying that they step back out into the world and they got all these grudges and all this horrible stuff again, all these things that they call down over themselves, and they're back in this terrible, terrible mess again. And now they say, no, Jesus, please, I want to rededicate my life to you, because I can't live like this. Now, I don't know how patient, I know God is patient, but God also has a line that he draws. So don't test God's patience by trying to think that you can just give your heart to the Lord and just carry on. Give your heart to the Lord and just carry on. Keep on coming back and back and back. I don't know at what point he turns it around and says, you know what? No. So don't take that chance. Don't take that chance. You step in, you go through this bankruptcy, the spiritual bankruptcy. You give your heart to Jesus, and then you treasure that. The best way to treasure that is to extend it to other people. Tell people about Jesus. Tell them how you felt before and how amazing it is to live without any of those burdens anymore. And then live like that. Live like that. I really encourage you. That is what giving your heart to Jesus is actually all about. And that's the part Satan absolutely does not want you to do. Because the minute that you are out of debt to him, he has no hold over you. He will try and trip you up in what you say to cause you to have things over you. you need to immediately say, "Ah, Lord, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry." And you go to the person and you say, "Listen, you know what? I'm sorry, but I lied to you. I'm really sorry that I lied to you. That was wrong of me, and I'm not sure how we can fix this, but you can let me know, and I certainly will never do that again." And you can say to them as well, "You know what? I'm really sorry about this." That's the next thing. If the person's passed on, you say, "Lord, how can I apologize?" And very, you know, it's amazing. One camp, oh, this was such an amazing experience. Sure. If any of the people that were youngsters in that camp listen to this, they will be able to testify of a moment in their lives where it was more precious than ever. So this is what happened. So as I said, I've run many spiritual warfare training camps, but this was a youth camp I did at one of the churches that I was at. And anyway, the Lord laid on my heart that I needed to take a tent with, and I needed to take a few things with me. And I spoke to the leaders. Well, I was one of them. You know, I was I was leading a certain age group. And by this stage, they had realized, you know, the leaders had realized that really I walk and work in the spiritual realm in a different way to everybody else. I mean, I could pick up what was going on spiritually, if there was anything, darkness or whatever. I could pick up all of those things. And so they had come to realize that that was, you know, how God worked with me. And that I could hear him very clearly in my heart, and that I was very obedient to him. Anyway, we get to the camp and they say to me, "So where are you going to set up the tent?" I said, "I have no idea. The Lord hasn't told me where he wants it yet." Anyway, so that was a Friday night. Anyhow, you know, because they knew that this tent was going to be there. Saturday, during the day, they came to me and they said, "Well, where are you going to put up the tent?" I said, "I don't know. The Lord has not told me where he wants it yet." And then towards the evening, at tea time, they came to me and they said, "You know what? You really have got to put up the tent." I said, "I can't put it up. I don't know where to put it up yet." And I said, "Until the Lord opens up that door and shows me where he wants it, I cannot put the tent anywhere I want. I've got to wait for him." So they kind of said, "Okay, well, fine. If that's what he's telling you to do, it's fine." And just before supper, the Lord said, "I want you to go walk over there." And there was a place that was under a few trees, and he said, "I want you to walk there." And so I went and walked, and I was just walking and praying and walking and praying. And at one point in the place where I was walking, I suddenly sensed like I walked into a dimension that you couldn't see. It was like a place that was separated from this world. Not that you could, I mean, I just knew I was in a different place. Everything around me still looked like the trees and everything, but I just knew something was different about this place I'd walked into. And I walked around that place, and pretty much as I was walking around, I could feel the edges of where the tent would be, because that was kind of like a place that it was separated out from our reality, and it was a spiritual place. And then the Lord said, "Put it up here." So I came and I put up the tent there. Now in this tent, it was quite a large tent, but in this tent, the only things that existed were a table. It was a wooden cross. It was a bowl of water, and a roll of toilet paper, and a red koki as in a red felt tip pen. But it wasn't the pen type; it was the more the fluffy ended one, so you could, you know, as you wrote, it wasn't fine printed. But it also wasn't thick print. And at then we had praise and worship after supper. And after praise and worship, I went up and I said to everybody, I said, look, all of us have done things that are really not right. And God knows them and you know them. And they're a burden to you. It's heavy on your heart, these different things. Well, after supper, right, you can go and you can just stand in a queue and you can wait your turn. And each one of you can go into that tent. You can take that red cokie that's there and you can write down the things that you did for which you're ashamed, you said, those are the things that are hanging over you, things that you did that hurt other people. You can go and write those things down. All those things that are a burden to you. And once you've done that, you're going to put your piece of toilet paper that you've written this on, you're going to put it in that water. And God is going to dissolve those letters. And you will see those letters dissolve off there into the water. He is going to take them away from you. And then you walk out of that tent and you've walked away and you cannot get those back again. You cannot go and get those words and put them back on the paper. They're gone now. You've taken them to the Lord, you've given them to Him, and you're now set free from it. Well, people started lining up there at about 7 o'clock. By 11:30, there were still people. There were still people sitting and waiting their turn. Three times I went in because there was so much red ink in that water. Three times I had to replace the water, and I prayed over the water each time that I put new water in. But I took that water out in the bowl and I said, Lord, what do I do with this? There's so much purity of soul, so much that's being poured out into this water. So much emotional turmoil. So much forgiveness that you've done. I can't pour this into a drain or anything like that. This is spiritually treasured. And he reminded me of an event that took place in the Bible where David was in a particular place. They were surrounded, well, not so much surrounded, but Jerusalem was surrounded by armies of Saul. And David just said the words. He said, oh, I just, he didn't, he said, my soul longs just to drink from the well in Jerusalem. Well, his friends heard this, and his friends put their lives at risk. And they went through all those armies, sneaking through. They got a bucket of water from the well, and they snuck all the way back. And they came and they gave it to David, and they said, David, this is water from the well. And David looked at this water. And he saw the hearts of his friends. And he saw how they put their lives at risk. And he saw that actually this water wasn't actually water anymore. This was the blood of his friends They could have died doing this. He never asked them to do that. But they could have died doing this. And so he poured it out. Poured it out on the ground as a sacrifice to the Lord. And that's all I could do. That's all I could do. And then I refilled it, and more people came in, and I refilled it again the third time. And after everyone was finished, I just went in myself, and I thought that I had honestly forgiven everybody, but you know, while I was sitting there watching these guys go in with such heavy hearts and coming out so set free, I did the same. And there was some, while I was watching this, I realized I still had some people that I would had problems with, so I did the same, but poured out the last bit. The next morning was Sunday, obviously, at service and everything. And then after that, packed up the tent. And as I had finished packing it up, I sensed 12 soldiers. And those soldiers weren't in, like, current day thing. They were in... They were robed soldiers with swords, and they were different. Each one was unique in a way, but you could see that these were like, I hesitate to call them like spiritual elders because I think that's just reaching too far, but they were really important people. They were all bearded and they were all quite old and grey and very seasoned. You got a sense that they were seasoned, battle-worn, hardened spiritual warriors. And the 12 of them stood around. And they didn't give a jubilee shout. They didn't... They clapped, but not like a clap like you do for applause. It's the kind of clap that you get for only thing I can say is like welcome. Well done. Just well done. And I think part of that was because, well done, I had let go of everything. But also, well done, I had followed the Lord spiritually. I had not put up the tent when people had told me to do. I had sensed and walked when he told me to walk. I'd found where he wanted at the time he wanted. Because that's the important thing about a spiritual place, right? A spiritual place... it's like a portal, but it's there for a moment in time, and then after that moment in time, it's gone again. It's never there permanently. It can come back to that place again. It can reappear at that same place again, but it's temporal. The spiritual world doesn't work like we physically work. Declare spiritual bankruptcy, folks. Go to the Lord. You're exhausted. You cannot keep on holding all of this against other people. It's draining you. It's wearing you down. You just want to be like you were as a really, really young child. And I mean, some people, I remember me, I was young, but I was just tormented by so many people. So I don't know how you do that, but there's that one moment in your life where you just had, because children are very forgiving. They will forgive people immediately for what they've done. You go back to that time where you had a carefree, happy life. And when you let go of everything, that's what you get back. You get a sense of incredible, incredible release. Jesus takes it all from you. You declare spiritual bankruptcy. You're under new management now. And to understand what that means, you need to read your Bible. Start with the book of John and then go back and start with Genesis and read from Genesis all the way through to Revelation. Just read to know who Jesus is. Don't try and read it like a book to understand it like a book. Don't try and do that. Just try and read to understand who God is, how he thinks, how he works, why he does things. Discover him in the pages. It's not like trying to read a legal book. It's about trying to read who he is, seeing him in the background operating. Well, guys, I just pray that if you are in that exhausted space, that you give your heart to Jesus and you just say, Jesus, please forgive me. I'm forgiven. I'm going to write this list now. And as I write this, each person I'm forgiving them right now. I'm letting go of everything I hold against them. I'll write down their name. I'll write down what the problem is. And I'm going to forgive them, and that's forgiven. And then you can go and do the same thing with the cookie and the paper. Just don't do it in the bath where it's going to go down the drain. What you do that way is to be poured out on the ground. It's too precious and beautiful for the pipes. Well, God bless, guys, and have an absolutely beautiful life, because it is an absolutely beautiful experience of living without holding anything against anybody and having nothing that anybody can hold against you. That's the beauty of it, of course. People might think they're holding things against you, but Jesus is the one that's inside you. So they're holding it against Jesus, not against you. You've been forgiven. And Jesus can handle that. So what's important is to try not to do anything that Jesus has to handle. Because you're under new management. You're under him. He's the one that carries that now, not you. And he took it all to hell. So it's in its rightful place away from you. And because he's God, because he's perfect, it can't affect him either. God bless, guys. Have a beautiful life.